Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll look at the incoming ban of e-scooters on public transport, the €9 million for phone-free schools, and as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so at any stage. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Much of the week, as you know, was dominated by the budget. Phrases like giveaway budget and baby budget were thrown around. But the one thing that has leapt out at me is the €9 million allocated for the phone-free schools. We're going to talk about it in depth later in the show, but it really has irked me. Now, if you've ever listened to me on any of the shows here on News Talk, be it this one or any of the others that I'm on, you'll know that I am passionate about online safety. I'm a strong supporter of legislation, education, and meaningful change when it comes to keeping everybody, but particularly children, safe online. But this, to me, is utterly ridiculous. I was in school, secondary school, from 2001 until 2007, and our homework journals had the school policy on the first few pages. And one of the bullet points that was there way back in 2001 said that we were not allowed to use our phones on the school grounds. If a student was caught with their phone on campus, it was confiscated. That was it. That's how it worked. And work it did. I have yet to come across a school that doesn't have a policy like that in this country. I get that social media has changed a lot and things in general have changed a lot since I left school in 2007. But to get to the stage where we're spending €9 million on pouches for phone-free schools seems utterly bananas. Particularly now at a time when, you know, kids are bringing magnets to school to unlock the pouches. Kids are bringing burner phones to put in the pouches so they can keep their smartphone on them. The pouches, the Yonder pouches, just seem like an overly complex solution to a side problem. It's not going to address the actual issue of cyberbullying or child safety. It's just not. Cyberbullying is not going to go away because your child is putting their phone in a pouch between 9 and 3 or 4 every day. I have to say, I've been very frustrated by this all week, but I'd love to know what you think. TechTalk@newstalk.com. is the email address, and without wanting to be a total moan bag, there's something else on the agenda that doesn't make sense to me, and that is the banning of e-scooters on public transport, which is coming into effect from Monday, October the 7th. I don't get it, but Colin Baker of Back from the Future is with me now to try and make sense of it all. Colin, how are you?
Very good, thanks.
It's been a while since we've chatted, but you were the first name that popped into my brain when I saw this incoming ban of e-scooters on public transport, because we have spoken numerous times on this programme and in life about how you are a fan of them. Can you just remind us of how, when and why you use an e-scooter?
Well, that's an understatement. I'm fanatical about them. Oh, I suppose I'm fanatical about kind of, you know, mobility, if you like, around the city, as I see this sort of glaring problem of congestion in the city. If you remember during COVID when there weren't cars around, do you remember how clean the air was and how, you know, greenery started to pop out of pavements? And clearly we have a serious problem with congestion and trying to stuff thousands of you know, 1-ton cars, gas guzzling cars around the city. And people complain about it all day, every day. So the scooter for me was very much a solution to that. I love cycling as well. But when you're moving from place to place in a job or visiting a client, going down to the bank or moving, you know, commuting to work, it's not very viable to constantly cycle because you tend to sweat. And not to harp on that for too long, but it's not nice for your colleagues or for yourself or anyone you're visiting. So the scooter revolution was the perfect solution in that it was a really, really tiny carbon footprint in terms of movement. It saved money. It saved time. You could realistically schedule a meeting at any time of the day and say, yes, it will take me 20 minutes to get there. Encourage use of public transport as an alternative to vehicular transport or to motor cars. And for me, it was a life hack. And so I also derive an amount of pleasure from it as well because it's just fun. I skated as a I was a kind of a wannabe skateboarder as a teenager, so maybe it appeals to that side of my personality as well. But in reality, it's the practical life hack aspect of it that appeals to me most.
Yeah, and I think you're not alone in that. You know, it's I know quite a few people who have them. We had one at home. I don't really use it that much because I think a lot of the conversation around the legislation and how slow that was to come into place, and I think some of the misinformation and the bad press that the scooters got, some of it justified, some of it not justified, kind of made me personally feel uneasy about it. But I do know that there are people who will use it either for the first mile or the last mile of their journey into work. So rather than driving, they can use the e-scooter to go up to the bus or the Lewis and get public transport in and then get onto the scooter for the last mile of their journey. It makes sense on a few different levels. Cars off the road, it eases with, you know, demands on taxis, which we know are in high demand. It eases on the demand on public transport and so on. So how did you react when the NTA, they put out this press release on the 26th of August saying that e-scooters are going to be prohibited, and it says that the guidance is prompted by safety concerns in relation to lithium ion batteries?
Well, first off, Jess, you make a very good point about its general use. Most people use e-scooters as a last mile solution. And another message that I like to constantly reinforce out there is that there's this separation, arbitrary separation between bicycles, e-bikes, e-scooters. Geometrically, physically, speed-wise, risk-wise, there's really no difference between them. A bicycle with big wheels and a frame versus a scooter with small wheels. In terms of its overall concept, there's no difference there. And yet there's constant separation. So, for example, if you look at the legislation, they're talking about it not affecting e-bikes. Now, I can understand them looking at devices like these and thinking, well, look, you know, particularly during congested times on the on public transport, it's a good idea to try and reduce that and in kind of optimize it for people coming on board. So not having large scooters and bikes there at busy times, that's just practical advice and guidance. But in terms of this conflation of the problem, you also mentioned the primary cause, or at least the cause and reason that they're asserting, is the danger of batteries exploding on trains and buses. That's really what they're hinging on. And this is a very common occurrence in sort of bureaucratic environments like that, where they seem to be missing the screwdriver person. The person who actually understands the technology itself. I can tell you from running back in the future, and one part of our business is component repair and maintenance. We repair laptops right through to X-ray machines, right through to customized circuit boards. And I can tell you empirically, not this is not opinion, the difference between the batteries, circuitry, power circuitry, power controllers, in e-scooters is no different to e-bikes. So if you're going to compel or you know a ban on e-scooters, then you need to do it on e-bikes as well, and you need to be consistent throughout that. The big problem here, and this is often conflated, is the prevalence of non-regulated devices across the board. So we have a thing called CE approval. It's nothing new. This is an approval platform, a regulatory body within the EU that keeps electronics and electrical equipment safe. When you build something out of components and batteries and motors, there's regulations to govern exactly how that's done and what fail-safes are built in to overpowering, overcharging, overheating, and ultimately what they call explosions or any kind of short circuits or things that can lead to danger. Now, that with CE approved devices, that's near as can be guaranteed that that circuitry is safe. We see it all the time. Even if we boil it down to simple laptop chargers, we'll see cheap, nasty laptop chargers that have come in from abroad, non-CE approved, 15 quid or 20 quid for this kind of, 20 volt charger, and the thing just melts at the once it gets busy, once it gets used, it starts to melt, or it sparks, or it makes sounds, or worst case scenario, and it is in very rare cases, it ignites, and can cause a fire, obviously. And it is cheap, non-regulated, improperly built circuitry, batteries, motors, and that's prevalent right across the board. If you're buying something with a sizable battery in it, like an e-scooter, like a bike, like even a laptop or a phone, the chances are, if it's particularly cheap and it's come from some unknown location, and you're getting a phone that's normally 200 quid and you're getting it for 50 quid, or a scooter for 250 quid when it's normally 500 or 600 quid, the reason is it hasn't gone through those mechanisms, Jess. And that's the message, that's what's going on here. They haven't considered the technical reality that we do have a problem. We have a problem with unregulated, unsafe equipment coming into Ireland, but that is not e-scooters. That is e-scooters, e-bikes, laptops, phones, tablets, electronic and electrical devices in general, that we all want to get a good deal, and we find a good deal, and we wonder why it's a good deal, and often it's because there's a fake CE approved sticker underneath.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really important message. And before anyone cites examples of fires that have, when a scooter's been on charge and it's gone on fire, absolutely that does happen. And as you've just outlined there, Colin, you're not saying that it's never ever happened in the history of e-scooters. That's not the case. It's the fact that,
Or e-bikes,
or
and we've
e-bikes.
considered them the same because they're the same technology, same batteries, same motors, same server. I can assure you that underneath the hood, aside from the size of wheels and the platform, they are the same components, the same batteries, the same motors. Not similar, they're the same.
If this doesn't stack up, why is it a thing?
It's the same thing when, if you remember when GDPR came out, GDPR was designed from a technical point of view to protect the individual's data and personal information. And bureaucrats, and I don't mean to be some sort of sensationalist, but I tend to find that larger organizations that are heavy on bureaucracy, and heavy on committees and consultation, tend to be heavy on the academic side of things rather than referring to the technicians at, and I'd say in inverted commas, quote unquote, at the bottom of the pile, who actually do know how these things are put together. They tend to be ignored. That's what you're seeing here, which is a lot of meetings. I mean, if you look at the regulation of e-scooters themselves, how many years and how many times over the years, these years, have we talked about, oh, where is the regulation at now? Right the way through COVID and lockdown, when nurses and first line responders were using e-scooters to get around, passing guards on the street, and guards are scratching their heads wondering what to do. The regulations should have been very simple. They are, thankfully, pretty much there now, but it's taking years to get there. The larger an organization, I think the less effective they are at ultimately making simplistic, straightforward, rational, logical decisions. The reason we have this decision not being technically informed is because of that nature.
Do you think people are going to ignore the legis like the, this rule, or do you think that it'll actually just mean that the e-scooters that have been purchased are going to just sit in the cupboard under the stairs now?
Well, look, as I said, there is another issue with non-approved equipment coming in, and I do think that aside from hoping that regulators will step in, I mean, if you remember years ago, the regulation of speed detectors, I remember guards coming into our shop about 15 years ago and shut us down for an hour to inspect us to see if we had any speed detectors. That's kind of gone with the wind now. But it is possible to regulate these things as to whether it'll happen or not. Consumers do need to be cautious themselves about what they're buying, as you rightly said. In terms of use of e-scooters on public transport, it remains to be seen. I tell you, I'll be brutally honest with you. I bought a case for my e-scooter. I put a picture of an oboe on the side, And it kind of looks like a musical instrument once I have it in the case. And I plan on folding it up. It folds up nice and neat and getting on the train, as I've always done. I know my e-scooter. It was, built largely by ourselves and a very accomplished engineer. I know it's fully CE approved. I know it's fully safe. I know it's nothing to worry about. And so I have a case that I'm going to cover it with. And let's see what happens. I don't think they're going to be up, able to look into my supposedly oboe case. I do not agree with, as you know, and I don't believe it's even opinion. It is technically the case that to regulate and to ban e-scooters and not ban e-bikes is pointless, is inconsistent, to put it mildly. And I would be very curious. I was going to just tempt fate and get in the train after the 7th of October and see what happens. But I don't particularly want to have an argument with a perfectly well-mannered Éireann Road Éireann employee. And I don't want to cause them a fuss either. So I'm wrapping it up in a case. I'm pretending it's an oboe, and let's see what happens.
I'm not advocating that people do go against the rules and all the rest. I'm absolutely a rule follower. I always
Neither
have
am
been,
I, by
always
the
will
way.
be.
I do break rules sometimes, and I can be a little bit cavalier sometimes, but I follow a lot more. I mean, most rules are there for everybody's protection and are accurate, in fairness. And
Yeah.
so following rules is a great idea. But this one is technically an absolute technical falsehood.
Well, you see, the issue. I completely accept and agree with your points around the safety side of things. Once it is a legitimate product and it's been certified and all the rest, to me that battery argument doesn't stack up, particularly when they're allowing the e-bikes. I also would respect it more if they just said, from a space point of view, public transport is busy. Like every single day, I'm on either the Luas or the
So
bus. And so I would much rather they came out and said, do you know what? Keep your e-mobility solutions to the cycle lanes and off the public transport because it takes up too much room. I'd actually prefer that because I could understand that a bit more. It's just the language and the reasoning in that press release from August that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
yes, I'm totally on your side. I would actually, if it was a consistent message where there was, because I've seen e-bikes fall over, so they'd be dragged onto to trains, and during relatively busy periods, and then some people will actually leave it on a stand or leave it up against something, and I've seen them fall over and injure people. And quite aside from the just the space it's taking up as more and more people. Commute to work on public transport. So, from a practical point of view, you're absolutely right. And at least that would be a consistent message. Obviously, they're going to let prams on, wheelchairs, etc. But when it comes to things that, are elective, if you've got an e-bike or an e-scooter, well, the likelihood is that you've got an alternative means of transport right there with you. You can get to work on the e-bike or the e-scooter. So, there's no absolute necessity to put it on the public transport. By all means, keep it off for the sake of space. But this message about the inaccurate technical assertion that they have, I'm sure they've spent a lot of time and a lot of money on consulting processes to research that and figure it out. And they are fundamentally and empirically incorrect.
Okay, I would love to know what you think. Email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Is this going to impact you? Is it the right decision? Is it the wrong decision? Does it tick you off? Again, the email is techtalk@newstalk.com. As always, Colin Baker, thanks so much for joining me here on Newstalk.
Thank you, Jess.
Now, for those of you who follow Colin online, you may know that his mother very sadly passed away in the last year. He's done some fundraising in her memory, and the next event is taking place in the National Concert Hall here in Dublin on October 14th. It's called Songs of Remembrance and Hope, and all of the proceeds are going to Our Lady's Hospice and Care Services Blackrock. You can find full details and tickets on nch.ie. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll look at that bonkers notion slash reality of spending €9 million on phone-free schools.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
This place is under new management.
By all Peaky Blinders.
Just so good. That is the theme tune for Peaky Blinders, which is one of the best TV shows in recent years, in my humble opinion. I absolutely love it. And this week we got a first look at photos from the set of the Peaky Blinders movie. Production started this week and it'll be on Netflix when it's done. I am so excited to see Cillian Murphy picking the Peaky cap back up once more to bring us another installment of Shelby goodness. I don't know if we have a date as of yet when it'll be ready, but as I said, I am very, very excited. Elsewhere this week, we got a fair bit of insight into the government's plans for phone-free schools. As I'm sure you've heard, there was €9 million allocated in the budget for magnetic pouches for schools around the country. They're called Yonder Pouches. Some schools have already introduced them, but the Minister for Education, Norma Foley, says this will now be the reality for every secondary school student in this country. On Wednesday, Kieran Cudahy spoke to a teacher from Clonakilty called Conor Murphy, who gave his reaction to that announcement.
I mean, they're not needed, first of all. Nobody's called for them. Nobody's asked for them. No teacher's asked for them. No student, obviously, has asked for them. No parent has asked for them. There's no need for them. Some of the teachers didn't know about it at work today. When I told them, they kind of, their jaws dropped. And like the words like ludicrous. Our students took out their phone the other day in my class. You might not be able to believe this, but they actually had their phone on and I caught them. And what I did was I said, give me your phone. And do you know what they did? They gave me their phone.
That was Clonakilty teacher Conor Murphy speaking to Kieran Cudahy. And I have to say, I agree entirely. As I said earlier on the show, when I was in school, we weren't allowed to have phones on school grounds. If you were caught, the phone was confiscated. But those instances were few and far between. Rather than spend €9 million of taxpayers' money, I have a serious question. Why don't the parents buy one if or when they're buying a phone for their child? You know the way you'd buy like a protective cover or a screen protector? Why don't the parents or whoever buys the phone for the child buy a Yonder pouch for them? Or why doesn't every school in Ireland buy a lunchbox that sits on a shelf at the front of the classroom, and why don't they compel students to place devices in that lunchbox at the start of every lesson? Why do we need to have a notion solution to a problem that actually just seems to make the problem more problematic? I don't get it. On Thursday, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lee MacDonald called for the Taoiseach to scrap this entire idea. She described it as a scandalous waste of public money at a time when so many schools are struggling to pay for heating and to keep the lights on. But Minister Foley joined Kieran on Thursday's Hard Shoulder, and this is what she had to say.
Yeah, I think, look, in the first instance, I think when you would look at this in isolation, and you would say, well, it's a lot of money. But I think when you delve down and when you tease it through, I think there's a very strong explanation as to why this is happening. So in the first instance, if you look at all of the research, both national and international research, it's very, very clearly telling us that young people, in particular, their learning is being significantly impeded. Their socialization, their ability to chat with one another, even in a school setting, you know, they're constantly in their phones, they're on their phones during break of class, lunch breaks and whatever. And it's interesting, for example, UNESCO has told us, in fact, that for the entire school day, there should be a ban on phones. And they have said, for example, when a student is interested interrupted in terms of, you know, a beep or a message coming through on their phone, it takes them 20 minutes to re-engage with the learning that's happening in a classroom.
The issue that people have is that, well, a smartphone on its own probably costs several hundred euro, and the cheapest plans to run a smartphone will cost a couple of hundred euro a year. That surely schools should be asking parents if a child is going to turn up with a phone to school because they need it for after school activities or whatever it happens to be, that they have to provide a pouch that gets locked at the front of the school. Why are we spending taxpayers' money on this when the phones themselves are funded by the parents to the tune of hundreds and hundreds of euro?
Absolutely. And I just on that one, you know, many principals have engaged in discussions on this over the last number of days as well. And so some of them have been very clear and they've said, you know, they've had to go to other resources if they wanted to procure things like these magnetically sealed pouches. They, you know, some of the parents did not have the 20 plus euro to give to their child to purchase it. And we're working really, really hard in education to ensure that we're lifting costs and pressures from parents. So we've introduced the free school books right across so that every child is equal.
Yeah, that was Minister Norma Foley speaking to Kieran. I have to say, I am not convinced. I think the Yonder pouches are a nifty solution, but it's the wrong solution. 1,600 SNAs and free school books are great, and Minister Foley is right to call that out. But we have children in this country who are sitting on waiting lists for support when it comes to dyslexia, dyspraxia, and others. We have parents spending hundreds of euro every single month for their autistic children to get the supports and therapies they need. Why don't we put the money towards that? A pouch that kids can open with a magnet is not the answer. But that's just my view. Let me know yours. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email. Rant over for now. We are now going to turn to something that has made my heart happy this week after moaning for the first two thirds of the show. Earlier this week, I went down to the IFI in Dublin for the launch of a new platform called SkillStack. And I am delighted to say that Robert McGillifaudrig, the man behind it, is with me now. Rob, how are you?
Good to see you, Jess. How are you?
I'm great, yeah. I'm delighted to talk with you. The last time we spoke was in America. We were on the Ireland Gateway to Europe trip, which is always a fantastic few days from my point of view, because you get to meet some brilliant brains who are using technology in new and innovative ways. And you're in that cohort of people. You had mentioned that you had a project in the works, and it has now finally come to fruition. So can you just introduce us to what it is?
Yeah, SkillStack, Jess. So when we met last, it was probably 6 months ago, and we were knee deep in producing the content at that stage. And it's taken us since then to launch the business. So really delighted to launch it. So SkillStack effectively is skills development through video. It's a streaming platform, so very similar to Netflix for skills development. So we've mapped the moments, Jess, that drive performance most in work. And we've invited experts on each of those moments to tell stories, to teach the skills, to move the dial on individual and collective performance, to drive social mobility, to drive better lives and better working lives, but ultimately better business performance.
I was at the launch in the IFI on Thursday, and I was really struck by the mix of people you have delivering these lessons. So there's, you know, former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, there's Sarah Geraghty from the Communications Clinic, there's Owen Tomás McDermott from the Communications Clinic, there's people, there's performance coaches, there's a broad spectrum of individuals who bring their expertise to the table. Can you just tell me how you went about handpicking those experts? And I suppose just if you could expand on that spectrum of topics that are covered.
Yeah, it feels like my life story, Jess, into a business. I have a twin brother, Kev, and we went two very different directions in terms of our career. It's a classic nature versus nurture. Kev went deep into the world of academia. He now teaches dentistry in Trinity. So he learned his skills and his vocation through a very classical method. Like many, I stumbled into business and I learned skills through story. And when I looked to apply the moral of the story, sometimes it worked, sometimes it failed. I iterated, it improved. But ultimately, it was a blend of skills that I learned through story, Jess. And that's the concept of skill stack. You're stacking the skills that drives your performance through story. So I actually got in touch with the people I learned most from over the last 15 years, Jess, and whose learning has impacted those around me in a positive way. So it has real heart and soul in terms of its origin, I guess. So I got in touch with the people I learned from, and I built a faculty. So they've all agreed to work with me, and we spent the last 12 months in designing content, in delivering beautifully produced short form video. So the types of people we've collaborated with and who are part of the faculty, so Margaret Heffernan is one, the award-winning author and TED speaker. Again, I've worked with Margaret over the years, yes, and her teaching, her thinking, her teaching has like ran so deep with me, and it's touched so many different aspects of my business life and my personal life. And I find myself, living and realizing and actioning that thought process on a daily basis. I've also worked with Eddie Wilson. He's the Ryanair CEO, so he has developed a skill stack on creating cost advantage. And Jess, I can't think of any other brand in the world to learn that skill from than Ryanair. Bertie Ahern, you mentioned, and then we have people from the world of high performance rugby. So we've looked at the, those moments that drive performance. We've assembled great storytellers who have great stories to tell.
You mentioned Margaret Heffernan, who was at the launch on Thursday, and I was so taken by her and the snippets that were played on the screen, but also the talk that she gave us. And I walked out of the room with an extra pep in my step, because something that I've written about in the business post and I've spoken about on this show in recent times is that whole notion of work-life balance. And as a millennial, kind of constantly going around going, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so tired, I don't know what to be doing. And she just reframed it instantly, going, you're not a workaholic, you're a lifeaholic. And that boundary between your work life and your personal life, it's not a hard thing. It's like this Venn diagram where there's that beautiful crossover and one feeds the other. And she just helped me in that 10 or 15 minutes she was talking, reframe my own thought process. And I suppose that's what you, I assume, want to hear from people who encounter the faculty that you've put together, is that it does just challenge thinking or offer a new perspective.
So, yeah, I think you've nailed it there, Jess. Like, there's elements of inspiration, there's elements of motivation, and there's also very practical teaching as part of the content itself. So, it's very rich, very engaging, but it will definitely challenge your traditional thought process. And it's built for today's context. So, again, it's exactly where we are right now. Where have we come from? In the world of work, we rushed to look after the needs of our people through COVID, and then through the Great Resignation, Jess, we rushed to look after their wants. So there needs to be a rebalancing and a real dose of common sense when it comes to how we work and ultimately how we live and how our working lives play out. A lot of talk, Jess, around well-being. People think that is physical and mental. They think it's the other end of the spectrum of working hard. Like, life isn't polarized like that. And I think Margaret's point was we need to consider work health. We need to consider work education and look at the life benefits that we get from that and how it improves those around us and our loved ones and ultimately how it, improves our lives. So I think her points were really well made. And what a phenomenal storyteller, Jess, wasn't she? Like, she
She's
was
just
really, really
incredible.
amazing. She captivated the 200 people there in the cinema itself. And again, the feedback has been phenomenal.
Yeah, I've and I won't keep you much longer now, but I've been reading a lot of I've always been a productivity nerd, right? I love reading productivity books. I try to get as much information as I can into my brain. But what's funny is seeing the videos from the SkillStack presentation, I completely see the connection that people will make and how much easier it will be for people to take takeaways from these classes versus reading a book, because you almost feel like you're in conversation with the person and there's that bit more personal connection. And the snippets that you showed on Thursday included some anecdotes, and I think that's just a much more, it's an easier way to digest information, I suppose, and apply it to your own life. Is that part of why you decided to go down this route versus publishing another book in terms of, you know, management, productivity and so on?
Yeah, again, like if we just think of our natural behaviours, like what do we do in our spare time, Jess? We rush to story, whether it be social media, whether it be Netflix, whether it be reading a book, but increasingly it's short form. So the concept of SkillStack is just enough content, short form video, just for the individual, so you can stack the specific skills that you need in that moment, just as you like. We've produced this content, Jess, with an award-winning documentary making team. It's beautifully shot. So it's very, very appealing. And in fact, it's entertainment meets learning through storytelling. So all of that was gone into the design of it. There's no point in having the best minds on these moments, teaching the skills that we need, unless we're going to consume it. So again, we've built it so people can binge brilliance.
Yeah, okay. I said to one of my colleagues who was at the launch with me on Thursday, I'm signing up purely for Margaret Heffernan alone. You can find the full information, including the pricing, up on skillstack.ie. Rob, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Good to see you, Jess. Thanks.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up in just a quick minute, I'm going to answer some of your tech questions if you want to get in touch. As ever, I just said it, the email techtalk@newstalk.com. After I answer your questions, John Fardy's going to be in with Screen Time. John, what's on the show this week?
So the big new movie of the release is what you could call Joker 2, but it's technically called Joker Folie à Deux, which is a very interesting way of describing the sequel. And I'm talking to the director, Todd Phillips, the man who gave us movies like The Hangover and Due Date, and then took this strange turn in his career and made the first Joker movie because he said he couldn't make comedies anymore in a world where there was 20 million people ready to take you down for making a slightly off-colour remark. So I'm talking to him all about the incredible new Joker movie. There's a very strange documentary showing at Indie Cork this weekend, Call Me Mule, about a man who takes three mules across America. And we'll have all the week's other new releases. So yeah, a rattle bag, if you will.
A rattle bag. So a few different things. Joker.
Yeah, go. Hit me
okay,
up.
Okay, brace yourself. No, so firstly, Joker, the first one, upset me no end.
It's a dark, twisted movie that is more like a Martin Scorsese film than any. Like in fact, in the interview with Todd Phillips, you know, when he first made that movie, there was executives going, how are we going to sell Joker pajamas? Quite literally.
Yeah.
Because you're not. Because it's not a superhero movie. There is some allusion to Wayne or Bruce Wayne. But apart from that, this is a dark, twisted psychological thing. And episode two of it, or the second movie, is even more so. It's kind of a courtroom prison drama musical with Lady Gaga. It's off its head in a good way, you know?
Yeah, but I find it interesting that you say, you know, he couldn't make comedy for fear of being cancelled.
He felt that. Now, I'm taking that slightly out of context and it was a wider conversation, but that was his modus operandus for a while.
But you think that something like that, because I remember, so one of my favourite films, I've said this to you before, is The Dark Knight.
Yes.
Heath Ledger as the Joker. Brilliant. Is, like, I rewatch that all the time. It makes my heart so happy.
Why so serious?
Correct and right. And so when I heard that Joker was being made, I was like, ooh. Because I loved what Heath Ledger did with that character. And
what
all the
did
rest.
You think of the first one?
My main recollection is being, like, deeply upset and uncomfortable. And obviously, you can't deny that it's a fantastic film. Like, it's an amazing watch. It's one of those watches that leaves you thinking, which I think is always a sign of a good film. But it freaked me out quite a bit. Like, I don't know if I'd be rushing to see the new one.
I remember someone wrote, Joker's great, but I never want to see it again. There is an element of that about these movies, but that's the power of cinema. You know what I mean? I mean, you know,
But is there are there other examples of characters from that realm being taken out of context and put in a different world?
Not to this extent. But I do think there are movies that people find powerful that they never want to watch again. So if you take a film like Manchester by the Sea.
Oh my gosh.
One of the greatest movies I've ever seen, but I never want to watch it again.
I watched that on a plane.
Wow. But it comes on TV and I'm like, no, I can't, you know.
Oh, I forgot about that film.
Yeah,
that's Casey Affleck Michelle Williams, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. But I never really want to watch that film again. It lingers too long in my memory, you know.
Yeah. Oof. On the show, just to change the subject entirely, on the show a few weeks ago, I was talking about that I'm rewatching The West Wing.
Oh yes, I probably the first time I saw it, I was not too young, but I wasn't as alive to those things, so I probably don't have this love for it the way other people do, but it's great TV.
It's funny you mentioned Breaking Bad, because I was off sick there a few weeks ago and I tried to start Breaking Bad again from the start.
Okay, have you watched it all previously?
This is going to get me cancelled when I watch. So I gave up after the third series.
The third series, not the third episode?
No, and then this time I gave up three or four episodes in of season one. I just, like, it's, again, maybe it's just the way I'm feeling at the moment. It's just too grim and bleak. And like when the body being dissolved in the bath crumbs through the ceiling, I'm just like, oof.
I put that on my Christmas cards. it is grim, but my God, Breaking Bad, it's just compelling, I found. I know some people found it slow. I found it never dragged. As this, there's nothing, even though I think The Sopranos is the greatest TV show ever, there's no character development like Walter White's ever in TV before, where he starts out as this good guy trying to do right by his family and ends up becoming Scarface.
Yeah.
You know? I just think it's incredible. And there are certain moments in it, like when his identity is revealed to his brother-in-law. Oh man. Some of the greatest TV ever.
Okay, maybe I'll give it another go.
I think you should.
All right.
Sure, what else would you be doing?
I'll be listening to Screen Time at 6 o'clock. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, before we go, I am going to do some of your questions. Let me open the inbox. You would think I'd have it ready. It's not like we do it every single week. But anyway, right, the first email that we have is Darren McGovern, who says, Jess, is there a way to block WhatsApp voice notes? I hate them more than you hate group chats. I would fight you on that one because I absolutely hate group chats. But I don't know that there is a way to block WhatsApp voice notes. You can, like what I do is put them on double speed. So when you hit play, there's a little one, like X1. And if you just tap that so it goes times two, it doubles the speed. You get the gist of what people are saying and you can just move on with your life. I've started to like WhatsApp voice notes a little bit more in recent times. But yeah. I don't think you can block them. Maybe I'm wrong. Have you found a way to block them? Email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Next is an email from Liam, who says, I have a very quick query that you might be able to help me with. My uncle, 60 to 70, is not tech savvy, but I got him online about 10 years ago with the refurbed laptop. He's on his second one at the moment, but the older broadband dongle Huawei isn't the best and is giving him connectivity issues. It's served him well over the years, but I think he needs to upgrade. I have had a broadband installation discussion with them, but he doesn't want it. He's been doing some research and there are minefield of options. I'm wondering, is there one that you'd recommend? He's in the D8 area in terms of coverage. It needs to be plug and play for him, really. He currently inserts a topped up SIM into the dongle and off he goes. So Liam, there are plenty of options when it comes to mobile broadband. I know that 3 Ireland have a pretty good offering. And it is exactly what you described there, plug and play. If he wants a more stripped back version, now it's not quite plug and play, but it might ultimately be a bit more straightforward if you explain to him how to do it. But if depending on the phone that he has, if he has a smartphone, he could tether his laptop to a smartphone. So that could be an option. But other than that, I would look at 3 Ireland in terms of the mobile broadband, very competitively priced. And yeah, absolutely does the job. I want to come back to the issue of phones in schools, because this has been something that, as you might know, I've been giving out about all day. But on, I think it was Thursday night, I put up a question box on my Instagram and I asked people to share their thoughts on the notion of spending 9 million euro on phone pouches. Here are just some of the messages that I received. So one said, my daughter is a teacher in a new school crying out for two more SNAs, not pouches. Another parent got in touch saying, I'm a parent of a secondary school child and I fully agree. The parents are the ones who have to ensure their kids follow the school rules with phones. In our school, the kids give them to the office in the morning and collect them in the evening. Apparently not everyone does it though. Another message that kind of stopped me in my tracks, and I'm not going to say this person's name because they may not want their information out there, but this person got in touch with me and said, I am utterly appalled and outraged. My daughter is autistic and we pay hundreds for the supports she needs. We would do anything for her, so that's not the point. The real point is that a token 50 euro to parents of children with additional needs would show they know this is going on and care. It wouldn't make the problem go away, but it would make me feel seen for the first time. We have to do everything privately because the waiting time for public support would have been too long. It's a very long and lonely road. I heard the minister earlier and don't understand how this was the best option on her desk for that money. And that to me, it just sums it up. I know some people will say it's only 9 million. That's not going to fix everything in education. And you're absolutely right. It's not. To reiterate the point that I feel so strongly about, that money could have gone elsewhere. It may not have solved a problem, but right now it is going on a solution to an issue that it seems from the research that I've done is largely in hand at each school on an individual basis. And I would much rather, as that person who messaged me there on Instagram says, I would much rather see an extra 50 quid going in the pockets of parents of children with additional needs than on a phone pouch. No matter how much time I spend thinking about it or talking about it, I cannot get my head around it. Let me know what you think. I really do want to hear your thoughts on this. And I also want to hear your experiences. If you are a parent in a school where the yonder pouches are working, tell me, like, let me know if I'm wrong. If you're a parent whose child is on a waiting list for assessment or for support, let me know. I don't know what we can do, but I do think it's important that we share these stories. So please do email me if you can. It is techtalk@newstalk.com. That's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira. No, I won't. I'm off. I'm actually away for a few days next week. There you are. I'll be back at some stage next week. In the meantime, have a great weekend.